Maybe the next morning, a sense of a deep breath and a movement forward. Okay, we've done the really hard sacred work of disaffiliations, but now we can move forward. All of us, everybody, right? Everybody can move forward and go and be where they need to be in a way without any of that extra baggage, I guess.
I'd like to welcome you to Mindful Leader. It's a podcast about leadership. My name is Dennis Shaw. I'm a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference. And I'm going to have as my guest today, Zach Bechtold. Am I pronouncing that right, Zach?
Absolutely.
Okay. And Zach is one of the type of clergy that I am particularly proud of in the Mountain Sky. A lot of conferences are worried about the aging of their elder population, their senior pastors at larger churches. In Mountain Sky, we have got a really breathtaking, refreshing thing going on. And we have people that are 30-somethings and 40-somethings that are leading our important churches. And Zach is one of those. He's at Bozeman United Methodist Church in Bozeman, Montana. You've been there 1 year, am I right?
Yeah, just celebrated a year here.
Wow. And Zach is not a native Coloradan, Montanan, Wyoming guy. He's got experience in Texas as well as New Mexico. My wife is a Texan. Our standard joke about Texas is you can always tell a Texan, you just can't tell them much. But my experience with Zach is that he's pretty open to a pretty constructive conversation. He was in Montana, then he came down to Cheyenne, where he was the pastor at Grace United Methodist in Cheyenne. And he was also what the Mountain Sky Conference calls a congregational resource minister, which means he gets to help local churches. So he's got, even though he's only about 8 or 10 years in ministry, he has got an insight into local churches that probably transcends the average person with 8 or 10 years of experience. And I have invited him to be sure and talk about that. But anyway, he's back in Bozeman. He's back in Montana at Bozeman. And on top of that, how I really got to hear Zach quite a bit was a podcast he does with Matt Franks, which is called Bearded Theologians. It's a theological, biblical conversation. Sometimes they talk about books, and it's fascinating. They have a great sense of humor. It's funny. I'll put a link to it down in the show notes. And Matt and Zach must be, by definition, good guys because both of them like baseball. So baseball is important to me. Zach's not nodding his head at me here in the screen. So although I will confess to you, Zach, and you can tell Matt, I'm an Atlanta Braves fan, but I'm not going to apologize for that. That's where I am. So good morning and welcome to Mindful Leader. Thank you for having said yes to be my guest.
Yeah, Dennis, thanks for having me on and thanks for the introduction. Man, I'm going to have you write my wiki page. That was fantastic.
It's my pleasure. I found you. I got some of that off of your LinkedIn and some of that off of your Bearded Theologian stuff. And I've sort of put it all together. So
I appreciate that.
I want to start our conversation off now. Of course, I want to focus on leadership as much as I can, but I want to start our conversation with our Mountain Sky annual conference and how we began that. The very first thing that we did at the Mountain Sky annual conference was we approved the disaffiliation of 38 churches. And that disaffiliation, for me personally, had some measure of pain with it. Not in this 38, but in the previous four, I had been the pastor of one of those churches. And as I inventory talked to other people in the conference who are not disaffiliating themselves, I was fascinated by the number of us that have had that experience where we're staying, but a church that we pastored is leaving, is departing. What was your reaction to that particular evening, and wherever you want to go with it? But what was your reaction to the evening?
Yeah, certainly. I felt we sat in very sacred space that evening as we had had the conversations and lifted up those 38 churches in the direction that they're going, that they feel called to go. And there was a heaviness to that sacred space. I haven't been in this conference long enough to have served any of the churches that disaffiliated, but I've certainly, every church that I've served in the 20 years I've been in the Methodist Church, all but one has officially disaffiliated, and the other that hasn't is voting for a second time to disaffiliate. They missed the vote by 2 or 3 votes and are going to vote again. And so I felt, having not had a relationship directly as a pastor with 38 that we had, I've identified and felt the weight of that, as many of you did and have served those congregations, and the grief that comes with that, and knowing the people in those communities and having served with them and been in the best and the worst of moments with them, right? That grief of, dang, it's hard. And then I'm willing to bet, I know that I felt, as I heard each of the churches that I served disaffiliate in various parts of the country, almost a sense of, I didn't do enough while I was there.
Is that fair to say you felt some guilt?
Yeah, I think it was guilt rather than failure, right? I don't think I failed them. I just felt guilty that I didn't do enough to move that needle in a way that I would hope would have been hopeful, right? And watching people who I was still connected with then leave the church that they called home because they couldn't go the direction, and starting to find new places, and the grief that they felt, really, really hard. I felt the sense of that in the room at any conference as we voted, voted to bless and move on with our 38 churches who disaffiliated. But then almost immediately, maybe not immediately, but maybe the next morning, a sense of a deep breath and a movement forward. That, okay, we've done the really hard sacred work of disaffiliations, but now we can move forward. All of us, everybody, right? Everybody can move forward and go and be where they need to be in a way without any of that extra baggage, I guess. I don't know that there's a better term for that, but there was a weight lifted.
I have been involved in this whole experience enough to know that whatever words we use, somebody's going to take offense to it. I think the extra baggage is good, because my personal observation is that it has been a considerable distraction over my 20 years as a Methodist pastor. It's been it was just a continuous regular conversation. And I think I'd like to believe now from that, we can move on to new things. And what you just said about the next morning, there was a different feeling in the room. I'd like to talk a little bit about how do we build something new out of the old? How do we, as leaders, what might be things that we think about of how it is that we build new things from this old what was before is not now, and so we've got a new direction we need to go. Have you thought about that?
Certainly, every Ash Wednesday for the last few years, especially the last few years, that has been a heavy thought on my mind as I do that service. As we talk about the ashes of the old palms from last year and the grief and that settles in with that, but the hope that comes from the realities of life that we go through hard times and do these things. I fully believe there's hope in the ashes, and that we have to go through those moments, of life, death, and resurrection. And I think we're in those moments, and we take old and move into the new. We're resurrection people, right?
Yeah. That's
who we are. And for me, I identify with that in these moments of there's so much there. that we can hope for and rise up out of the ashes and use those ashes of grief and pain that we've been through to guide us into the future of resurrection and what the Holy Spirit is leading us to in these moments. And so I think there's a lot.
Yeah. For me, when I would do the Ash Wednesday, I always would do a reading of Psalm 51. And I would get to that, I think it's verse 10 or so, but it was this, in creating me a true heart, creating me a right heart. And it was a chance to acknowledge that what had gone on before had been flawed, but that God had the capacity to create in us a new direction. And I'm like you. I would, every year when I would do that, I was humbled by it. And I often wouldn't preach. I would just let the scripture often speak.
Yeah.
For it. So
it also makes me think of the song, the old Gungor song. It's a few years old now. Beautiful Things. You make beautiful things out of dust, right?
Yeah.
You make beautiful things out of us, and there's something heavy about that, but there's something so hopeful in the future of, man, it's dusty and ashy, and sometimes we like to put on the sackcloth and sit in the ash and say, woe is me. But when we get up from there into that healing, there's hope. And yeah, like I said, I feel like we're entering into that time of movement, of wearing the ashes and moving forward.
So those at your particular congregation there in Bozeman, Montana, that may be grieving this or still grieving this, as what I think I hear you saying from this is that you would offer them the church year, the liturgical elements of the church year, and you to help find solace. I hear both Easter and I hear Ash Wednesday. Is that a fair approximation of what I think I heard you say?
Absolutely. And I'm even kicking around the idea of offering All Saints Day as a sacred moment to maybe not identify our churches by name that have disaffiliated, but to acknowledge those who have moved in a different direction and the grief that comes with that and loss, but the hope and whatever resurrection they may find.
Yeah, it's what we've experienced is part of life. So let's celebrate what's happened, but let's move on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard to build something as spread out as Mountain Sky is. Now, for those that are listening to the audience that may be from Georgia or Virginia or whatever, they may not have an appreciation for what you and I are talking about. But I mean, like Montana is larger than any state east of the Mississippi. It's the largest of the four states that make up Mountain Sky. I personally have driven across Montana, what, about 800 miles? It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's a long way.
And so, and then you talk about the cultural issues. And so we have this tribe called the Mountain Sky Conference. But the reality is within that tribe, we have clans, we have families that exist. And sometimes those families exist fairly close to each other. I mean, Denver is not Colorado Springs. Right. Colorado Springs is not Denver. They, even though they're only about 35, 40 miles apart from the outskirts of one to the outskirts of the other, they're very, very different. So it seemed like to me, one of the things that we've had is some members of the tribe have left. Mm-hmm. Some members of clans of the tribe have left, but we now need to go back and strengthen the tribe. We need to go back and strengthen that tribe. How if you were to talk to Bishop Karen or to your district superintendent on this topic, what might you say to them about how it is that you would recommend, or frankly, a tribe in Birmingham, Alabama? But what might you say about strengthening the tribe? How do we go about doing that while honoring the clan, honoring the family? How do you do that?
For me, it's probably a much smaller picture than thinking really, really big.
Okay.
That we dig back into the small personal relationships whether it's the pastor, the congregation, or church members, or a combination of both, that we show up in our communities, in as we're looking throughout our conference in strengthening our connection and building those relationships, showing up is more than half the battle, regardless of where you are in leadership. Showing up, we got to show up. And that's something that I've noticed. I've predominantly served Montana and Wyoming in this conference who, like you said, you know, Denver's not Colorado Springs, you know, Cheyenne's not Laramie, Laramie's not Cheyenne, and neither of those are like the rest of Wyoming. Montana is very, very similar. Bozeman, you know, people love Bozeman, but it's often referred to as Bozangeles, right? It's different and it's changed. Yeah. Missoula is different. And then you know, the west side of Montana is different than the east side of Montana. You know, like you said, we are a tribe, but we have different clans. And what I have found within all of that is if we show up, we remember and notice how much more we have in common than we don't. And certainly can work through the things we don't have in common, and find those ways. And, you know, you look at it in the bigger context of, you know, our states, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and our church in Idaho, we band together as a state or as a region when we need to, even in the midst of, well, you know, maybe we're willing to come together with that unified voice, and show up in those ways on the conference level and work towards unity there and moving forward in ministry, and coming together in this very large conference. Like you said, when I was in Iowa a couple months ago, working with their licensing school, I got to teach evangelism and discipleship there. And their concept of, okay, we have 400 some odd churches in Iowa. Well, how many is there in Wyoming? Well, there's 36 in the whole state. And that's one district. Like, the concept of that is so far beyond what they understand. You know, how does that work? Well, you know, we get creative. And, you know, we use a lot of Zoom and we put a lot of miles in the car, and that's just what we do. And we do that so we can show up, so we can be present with one another.
So I hear you saying that the start point for you is to build relationships. And that, and I'm hearing you say that is build those relationships locally. Mm-hmm. And then I'm hearing a suggestion of the fact that you also need to build relationships across the connection. Is that a fair statement of what I think I'm hearing you say?
Absolutely. That's how I approach each new appointment for me, is I begin building relationships in the local congregation and in the community, and begin to connect those pieces to the relationships I have in the conference, or even across the denomination. But I always start with, let me learn the people and the makeup of the church and the community and see how I can plug that in to the bigger network. The bigger connection, that's a better word.
Yeah. Randy Jessen, who is a pastor who has probably, he has left to go to the General Global Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. But I, in Colorado Springs, there was something that happened inside of near my church where I was the pastor. And it was a meeting of some kind, and I didn't go to that meeting. And Randy called me on the phone and said, this is an important meeting, and next time we get together, I strongly encourage you to go, because you're the connections representative in that community. Mm-hmm. And I was a little surprised you weren't there. And I didn't feel guilt, but he emphasized how important it was for me to go, and he was right. And so I went, and it led to a very something they're still doing at that particular church, which led to a food pantry. Is what it led to. Mm-hmm. It led to a cooperative food pantry emerging out of that. But it was, the connection was willing to hold me accountable. He knew me, and he was willing to invoke that connection. And I'm not sure necessarily that other denominations who don't evaluate the connection to the degree that we seem to would necessarily have had that phone call. I'm not sure they would have. I don't know.
Right. And that's, you know, we talk a lot in this conference about the isolation, because we're so spread out, right? when I moved to Montana 6 years ago and served Shoto Brady Dutton, I was the only Methodist pastor in two counties serving three churches. Yeah. You know, the next Methodist pastor in any direction was minimum an hour away. And we have to show up. If we don't go, if we don't make connections with one another, if we don't go to the district gatherings, to annual conference, you know, if we don't go to orders, if we don't go do the things, yeah, we're going to be disconnected, right? We don't get to have a voice in those rooms, and they're needed. We need to hear those and be present for that, for our own sake, to hear what other people are doing and to encourage each other and to feel slightly less isolated in a pretty easily isolated area of the world.
Yeah, I'm a retired Army officer, and for 24 years, I moved around the world. And it was fascinating that after I'd been in the Army about 12 to 14 years, I began to re-encounter people I had met earlier in the story. And knowing them meant the new place I was going to was not a total place of strangers. There was others there who I could relate to. And so it's amazing how relational the Army was, and frankly, it continues to be. Even most of my very good friends, a lot of my very good friends are retired Army people like I am.
Mm-hmm. I have found, moving around as much as I have across the country, or at least the Southwest and then up here, the places I've served, military towns, military communities, have identified much more with my family than other churches and other spaces that haven't had that kind of itinerancy, transient lifestyle. And it's folks who have served in the military at some point in their life who understand, oh yeah, every couple of years you pick up and go because that's where you were told to go. We get that. Yeah. And we get the struggle with that, with families and all of the things that come with it. There's a shared connection there, even outside of the church, when people are like, you move how much?
Yeah.
We get that. That's hard.
Yeah.
There's some shared life there.
Yeah. Well, the fact that somebody can pick up the phone and call you and say, Dennis, you're going from Kansas to Korea. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I'd like to talk though a little bit about the connection. And for those that might be listening, the connection is the term that we use to describe the relationship between the local church and what we call the district, which is usually 40, 50 churches or so, somewhere in that range, with the conference, which is in our case in Mountain Sky, is now 310 churches, and then also with the general church, and that's the church in generally we refer to it as Nashville. It's got outposts at other places, but we think of it as the general church, and Nashville is sort of the headquarters for things that goes on globally. And we talk about the fact that that's all part of the connection. And my own observation is that one of our failures as leaders at the local church is establishing what the connection is all about. What does it do? Well, how does that all fit together? How does that all work? So when people at Bozeman or at Grace in Cheyenne question the nature of the connection, where they say, why do I want to send my hard-earned money to Denver? And they're going to just send the money on to Nashville. What do you say to them about in your explanation back of why that is a good idea?
Yeah. You know, I always start in probably a really selfish place and say, your connection to the conference brought me here.
Amen.
Right. Like at the end of the day, because we're connectional and we're itinerant, I'm here because the conference, the bishop, the cabinet, whomever you want to point at, said through prayer, we feel Zach is called to this space to lead you and be in community with you. And that's just kind of the starting point. Here's a really tangible way you could see your conference dollars at work. Same thing for when I was a congregational resource minister traveling around Wyoming. I got that question more often in that space than I have as an appointed clergy. of why are we doing this? Why are we paying the conference? Why does this matter? And well, I'm standing in your space today answering these questions. That's part of where your money's going to. That's part of being a resource of the conference and the benefit you have of being connectional. I get to show up. I get to have these conversations with you. Your district superintendent is another space, as well as your pastor. Those are the really tangible items, but we also, you know, the intangible things that we see in the leadership, leadership spaces where we send our pastors, you know, whether it be orders or annual conference or even other events that we put on that we can go and do continued ed and learn and grow and be connectional or be connectional with one another in our conference and beyond. That's why, for me, that's why it's important is we have some shared space over a large area. Written really globally, right? Which that's the really hard one to see sometimes, whether it be Nashville or Africa or anywhere else in the world. We don't see the tangible nature of our connection there all the time, except through maybe General Conference, but that's probably a really poor example because of the nature of what General Conference has been the last bunch of years.
My sister was probably a delayed casualty of Hurricane Katrina. She died of a heart attack about 4 months after Katrina. And I caught the flight out of Atlanta flying down to Mobile. And the person on board the flight worked for Habitat for Humanity, one of these $1 a year executives worked for Habitat for Humanity, was an Episcopalian. And he found out that I was a Methodist pastor, and he almost leaped out of the chair of the airplane to talk to me about UMCOR, United Methodist mm-hmm. Committee on Relief, and what a profoundly important element that was of Habitat for Humanity's work, and blah blah. And he just went. It was interesting. Here was this non-Methodist person, lay person. Could mm-hmm. preach to me and talk to me about the connection in ways that I wonder how many of our own local church members could do that.
Right.
It was fascinating.
UMCOR is probably the biggest concern that I've seen from people in conversations about disaffiliation. We understand what disaffiliation means for the local church, but what does it mean for UMCOR? What happens with UMCOR? And you're right. People know whether they're Methodist or not. They've had an experience with UMCOR because they do incredible work. We had a church member here in Bozeman. She owns a Korean restaurant, and kind of at the height of it's still at its height, but Ukraine with Russia a few months ago. There's a lot of Ukraine. Students here at MSU and professors and people who are deeply grieving and worried about family and friends and what's going on over there as well as we are. And she put together a fundraiser at a restaurant one Sunday afternoon, 11 to 2 o'clock, come eat for free. And she wasn't doing finger foods and sample sizes. If you left hungry, it was your own fault, and did it donation only. And then put together, a silent auction with 40 items that she literally walked around downtown Bozeman and said, "Hey, I'm doing this. Can you donate something?" And she 100% of the proceeds, 100%, went to UMCOR to then send to the Ukraine because of her, the value of that connection and the value of that ministry and knowing that she can give 100% of what she made in 4 hours to UMCOR, 100% of it's going to go to help in Ukraine, right? And raise like $13,000 just feeding people. And it was not just Methodist in the room. It was everybody. And she was super open about this is going to UMCOR. They're a phenomenal organization. Everything you give is going. Everything you give is going. And she was so proud to be able to say that. And so thankful just to feed people and do something good.
Yeah.
It was really pretty incredible to see.
One of my favorite recordings, it's a YouTube video, is David Foster Wallace doing this thing called This Is Water. Have you ever seen that?
I have.
You're not.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think it's the, it'll, for those of you who haven't seen, I'll put it in the show notes, but his talk opens with these two fish swimming along in the water, and this other fish is swimming towards them, and the fish swimming towards them says, "Hi boys, how's the water?" And then they swim on by, and the two fish, one fish looks over at the other fish and says, "What the hell's water?" I love that, because I think you made the comment about, for example, the connection gave Bozeman you. Mm-hmm. And the connection also helped fund part of your education through $900,000 a year to Iliff Theological School of Theology. Mm-hmm. So $3.6 million went to, or $2.7 million went there while you were there. And part of that investment helped produce you. And I think we forget that. And I also tell the story, of course, the story about this one is, how do we know who the Nelson Mandelas are? But Nelson Mandela in the 1920s went to a school that was the only school in the Union of South Africa that a boy of color could go to, and it was funded by the Methodist Episcopal Church. Mm. So I'm assuming what that means is that the Methodist Episcopal Church helped produce Nelson Mandela. I mean, he was a fantastic change agent for the world. How many other Nelson Mandelas are there out there going to schools and places and things that we fail to mention? Also, during the crisis that we had with Ebola, you kept seeing on public television, this talking head would be talking to you from Liberia, and they would be talking about Ebola, and they'd be standing outside of a hospital that had a cross in flame that you and I would recognize. And they never mentioned this as a Methodist hospital, anything like that, but this would be the only hospital in a locale. You and I knew as we're watching this, that was a hospital played for by our apportionments.
Right.
And to me, that's an example of how the connection operates. And to me, it's an example of, this is water. We just don't understand sometimes what it is we're doing.
Right. That's a perfect analogy, right? Why does this matter? What is it? And we'll look around. It's all here. I feel that way when people, having served in New Mexico and growing up in Texas, and it's 100 and way too hot down there right now. I feel that way now. And the flip side, when it's winter here and it's negative 20, negative 30, and all of my friends and family down there going, "Oh, it's too cold. Why do you live there?" And I just want to say, look, just look around. This is why I live here. It's not 115 in the summer, and it's gorgeous. And the people are phenomenal, right? Just look, just see, you know? It's that same question. What's water? Well, look around. It's all around us. That's why I live here. And the same, that would be the same answer for the folks, for many of the folks that live in wherever you choose to live, of this, look around. This is why I live where I live. There's something meaningful there.
Yeah. You have and part of the theme is that you have a relationship with the world around you, in a different way in Montana than you might have it in New Mexico or Texas.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely, the culture of Montana definitely seems to lean into the fullness of creation more so than anywhere else I've lived. And I don't know if it's because I'm more aware of it and in tune with it. And that's just where my understanding of theology has pushed me living here, or if there's a bigger sense of gratitude for it and connection with it. I don't know. I'm sure it's a different answer for everyone. But I definitely feel more connected here to the fullness than I have anywhere else I've lived.
Well, I've lived in Alaska and Utah and Colorado, and I can assure you that people that live there are often full of awe of what it is that they, you know, they sort of look around and they wake up in the morning and they look out on across their horizon and they just go, "Wow."
Yeah.
And they pay me to live here.
Right. I feel very fortunate for that. Having grown up and thought I'd never leave Texas, right? Because that's what we do in Texas, and living in New Mexico and feeling the same way of, man, this is a pretty cool place to live. And then moving to Montana, having never been north of Denver ever in my entire life until we moved, and thinking, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. And they get to pay me to do it. This is pretty great.
I've been talking to some of the guests about the fact that there's times that we talk about the fact that the conference is here to serve the local church, but that how hard that is sometimes for the conference to actually live that out, that it becomes a very subtle hierarchical shift. And I know I've personally had people tell me that even though they will say, the conference is here to serve the local church, the way they live their professional or volunteer life is exactly the opposite of that. That the church is to serve the conference. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see any of that at Bozeman? Do you ever see that? Did you ever see that when you were a congregational resource minister?
I saw that more when as a congregational resource minister, probably because those comments were directed more at me.
Yeah.
As I showed up places, I got to go in and have the conversation of, well, I'm here not to benefit the conference, to benefit you and really work and build that trust in that way. But I also, that's how I approached the role as a CRM, is that it was the resource, the local church, and not to preserve the institution. And so that, I mean, that was just my approach of I'm going to come in into these spaces, into these churches that aren't my local congregation, but I get to help be present and learn and find out and dig into as much as I can about the local, what they're doing locally, and how I can help do that there, help them do that more there, not so that it goes back to Denver or anywhere else in the conference, but so they're rooted in their community, and naturally that feeds back into the conference. But my hope, it's more of a bottom up, you know, a grassroots rising into that rather than a top down.
Yeah, I think, well, I preached this last Sunday. I preach about twice, three times a year. And this last Sunday, my overall theme was humility. And I went to a quote, and I'll probably butcher the quote, but because he didn't say it exactly this way. But John Wesley made a comment that humility was the most important of all of our Christian virtues. And as a matter of fact, humility is like the mother, father, uncle, aunt, grandparent of all our other Christian virtues. It's where everything starts. And I would say, I hear in your telling of that story a certain humility about how you go in there, and instead of bombarding people with why they need to know what they need to know, in your opinion, you operate from a space that I would call humble. I'm hearing humility, even though you didn't mention the word humility. I heard humility in your story. That's where I heard.
Sure. My hope, regardless of what I'm appointed to do or where that is in the conference structure, is to come in and walk alongside the people.
Yeah.
Knowing that, gosh, I've moved 7 times in 13 years for the Methodist Church. And I know at some point I'm going to leave, and how, you know, if I come in and it's just my way or the highway, right, that leaves with me. And often everything that I did or tried to do leaves with me. And I have found that, you know, it's a lot easier just to come in and walk alongside people, and hopefully some of that sticks when we do go, and that we leave enough around for the next person to pick it up and take it where we couldn't.
I think John Maxwell makes the point that all of us affect in the course of our life 10,000 people. The question is not, are you going to affect them? This question is, how are you going to affect them?
How are you going to do that?
And I just wonder if humility isn't and kindness and grace. I mean, people would ask me, did I have a leadership principle that I operated from? My answer was, love the congregation where they are. That was where everything started out of that. That was the start point.
Yeah.
And you haven't said those words, but I've heard those words. So I guess to sort of semi wrap up, and I will come back and ask you one more question, but what I sort of hear you saying is sort of like, how do you create the new out of the old? The answer you would give to me is by looking at the relationships around you. Is that a good paraphrase?
I think that's a great paraphrase. I've been preaching, or I did a quick two-week sermon series on Proverbs. And I never really preached out of Proverbs. I've read it, I've done Bible studies, you know, done the things, but I've never done a sermon series on it. And so digging into the wisdom of Proverbs, and what I found fascinating about Proverbs that I don't know that I really connected with before was the whole purpose of it was to be a history book, to be a guidebook for the Israelites moving forward, taking the old and guiding it into the new for generations and generations of here's the wisdom that we've learned over time, and we want to pass it on. And so that you have this collection of thought and wisdom and ups and downs and, you know, success and failure in this way that you can connect with one, your history, your ancestry, but also live into it and move forward in this new, in the new way. And because it's not written in a, this is how we have always done it. Here it is. Take it to heart and see where it takes you.
Wow.
And I found that so profound in those, just that quick little two-week series of, I thought this was a cool book before, but this is a really cool book. Probably should pay a little more attention to it.
Yeah. I think part for me on the Bible as a reference point in general is the fact that these people that are in the story are us. They're us. Part of the illustration I used on Sunday was about this passage out of Genesis. I think it's 32, where Jacob is left on the lonely side of the Jabbok, and he has to wrestle with God, and he gets a new name. And you could translate Israel, you could translate it as someone who wrestles with God. We're all Israel. We all wrestle with God. Right. And it's powerful of what those words say to us. And again, coming back to the words I used earlier, that it's humbling. Mm-hmm. It's actually
very
humbling.
It's very humbling. Yeah.
Any point that you'd like to go back over one more time before I say goodbye and thank you to everybody for having listened, or that you want to clarify or anything like, or come back to, or you wish that I had asked or talked about?
I don't know. That's always a question I ask on my podcast, and I never know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'll talk for days. That's.
I'm going to invite you back.
Please do. I'd love to.
I'm going to invite you back. Yeah. Well, there. I do have one question. Did you and Matt meet in Texas, or where did you meet?
No. So Matt and I met almost 9 years ago to the day, about a couple of weeks ago, when the Global Young People's Convocation was in Manila, Philippines.
Okay.
He and I was in New Mexico, he was in Oklahoma, and we got connected with Young People Ministries. And so, you know, another connection back to the Global Church in Nashville there to lead a group of young people to that legislative session. And we had known each other on Facebook for about a year leading into this. We met specifically for Young People's Convocation. And we're doing fundraising and connecting on Facebook, and then met in the airport in Dallas face to face for the first time and haven't looked back. Almost died in the typhoon, you know, just all the crazy things that happened with that event. And our whole thing was setting out with the podcast was to say you can have fruitful relationships via the internet, and you can have fruitful and healthy conversations in this space as well. And that's what we try to do.
And the people of Castle Rock, Colorado, probably are thankful that you built that relationship with him, because I have to believe that you being here made Matt feel like this would be a safe place for him too.
Absolutely. There was a lot of tugging and pulling involved as well.
Yeah.
It was very selfishly, because we had never lived, you know, in a conference together, much less a state that touched one another. And so, and I guess we still don't, but we're 2 hours closer than we were.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I want to just say thank you again for having given your time this this morning. For those of you that are listening, I just encourage you to see if you can find the podcast on iTunes. You can also find it through Amazon. I'm registered with Spotify. So if you can't, if you try to get there and try to register, you know, as a regular podcast on your server, and you fail, send me a note and I'll tell you how to find it and I'll help get you linked up. But thank you very much for your time today. And Zach, again, thank you for yours. God bless you. Yeah. Peace
thank
be
you,
with
Jess.
You.
Appreciate you.